All right, we're back. It's the steering committee. We're sitting back here in the TSC garage.
Worldwide headquarters.
Worldwide headquarters. Just finished up some... I cook once a year, but I just made some chili. And
you should cook more than once a year.
It was good, wasn't it?
It was really good.
Yeah. So I'm kind of proud of myself because back when we lived in Chicago, I was a regular. I guess I could say I was a regular bar one time in my life, and it was this bar. It's still there. It's called Resi's. It's a German bar. Irving Park and Damon-ish. Sorry, Marty, I'm forgetting my... I've been gone for 5 or 6 years. Jeez.
Yeah.
But there was a time I hung out there a lot. One of a couple times in my life, I've made a recommendation to a restaurant that ended up in something on the menu. And so they would serve Spätzle, which is this German sort of these hand-rolled little noodles. They're delicious. You can pan fry them with some onions and cheese or whatever, but it was a staple of pretty much most of their dishes there. And, but they also served chili for some reason, not a traditional German dish. But I suggested one day, hey, you know, I like chili. I like Spätzle. Why not both? And I believe to this day, they still have the Spätzle chili on the menu. Okay.
So that's because of you.
So I was trying to recreate.
They call it Ryan.
No, they don't.
They should.
No, I know. Maybe got a land shot with my name on
chili.
I think the credit's probably lost the time, unfortunately, but I tried to recreate that today. A few years ago, my buddy Andy was living out in Alexandria, Virginia, different place, and there was this great restaurant called the Hard Times Cafe, and they had the best chili I'd ever had in my life. So much so that I think I went back 3 times in 3 days and whatever, and I have a friend here in Denver who grew up in Alexandria, and she was home recently. And I said, hey, you know, how far are you from this Hard Times place? Can you bring some of this chili mix? Because I haven't been to Alexandria now in years, and I still talk about how good this chili was. And so I tried some, and I'm like the only meat eater in the house, basically. So my wife and daughter were away. I cooked meat and
cooked some meat.
Turned up the old steady and dumped it on Spätzle. So here we are, and that's what we're eating.
Well, it was delicious.
I'm glad you liked it. I mean, it looked a little odd. It kind of looked like hamburger helper.
It looked like what Hamburger Helper was trying to match. There must have been an original thing that was based on
high-end Hamburger Helper.
Farm to table.
Pretty much. So. Or Alexandria to table. But no, it was good. So we're sitting here. We're in the garage.
Got a couple topics on the discussion here. I guess I was going to start off by you were regaling us with the true crime stories in your neighborhood.
A couple weeks ago.
The brazen robbery.
The worst car in the neighborhood got stolen right under our noses. Neighbor's car had an old, like, 92 Accord, but it was a manual, I think, in a coupe, or at least a coupe, and
for some reason found it desirable.
They always pop up on the list, but you just said you had some...
Should we
give a little background here? Apparently in Denver right now, maybe this is the same anywhere in the country, car thefts are up like 2,000% or something.
Although this didn't have anything to do with the car theft per se, though. So
here I was stressing about how my neighborhood is apparently going to the
I wanted the listeners to know that, like, you know, it's not like I live in some gated community that's just completely, you know, free of all this stuff.
Probably the average price in your neighborhood is higher than my neighborhood, but you are also closer to downtown.
Yes.
And so that brings in...
I don't want to make light of this because it is kind of serious. It wasn't a car theft of any kind.
It's a nice neighborhood.
Isn't a car theft? Yeah, it is a nice neighborhood. But so what happened the other day, apparently, I was out yesterday, and I guess I live between two streets. One is a very, you know, it's two lanes, one directional, relatively fast moving traffic.
Yeah.
The other one is a one lane in each direction, separated by a wide, you know, park boulevard type thing. It's a very nice, pleasant street to walk down and stuff, but it does have... has a travel lane.
It would be 6th Avenue for the... 6th Avenue, right?
7th.
7th Avenue, right.
Neighborhoods.
6th Avenue is really...
6th Avenue. Well, 6th Avenue is the one next one over. That's three lanes in one direction. That's much louder to live on. So I live between that and the other one, 8th. It has stop signs every other block. So the idea is that cars can drive down it, but they're supposed to go pretty slow.
Yeah.
You don't want fast-moving traffic. You should go onto the other street.
Yeah, that's a very Denver thing, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very hard to... It's sort of confusing, but I think, probably slows down traffic.
Well, so apparently, Someone was just flying down this road, which I see occasionally.
I'm sorry, this is the busier road.
No, on the slow.
Oh, on the slow. Okay,
they're just driving down the parkway.
Your little street.
Way too fast. Mm. Yeah, down 7th, which you see, unfortunately, too much. But they do have stop signs, so people will, like, people will be flying down and then kind of do a kind of stop. Yeah, not hardly even a nuts, almost just a little slowdown and then punching it again. Yeah. And that's what was happening here. And I don't know what the story was, but this person hit a pedestrian.
Wow.
And sent him flying.
Wow.
35, 40 feet air, crashed the car after the hitting of the pedestrian. The pedestrian survived, but may have some issues.
Wow.
A doctor on our street had to run up an emergency room doctor.
And that's the kind of neighborhood it is, folks.
Well, there it is. Yeah. But had to go and, like, you know, triage him until the paramedics got there. The driver, though, it was crazy when, because I got home, I could tell something was off because there were cops everywhere and they were walking up and down our street and around our block and stuff like that.
Finally found you, Doug.
Apparently, that's what I was worried about. But apparently the guy, after crashing his car, backed it out, completely wrecked, and, like, drove it around, like, the wrong way down the street.
Really?
Which was tearing through the neighborhood, and then a couple blocks from our house, dumped the car and ran off.
Wait,
so they don't know, so it's a hit and run at this point, obviously.
Okay. So probably a stolen car or something.
It might not be, I mean,
was it an Accord?
You know, I went to go, I couldn't find the
car. I shouldn't make light of this, but
the car wasn't, I couldn't find the car. It wasn't immediately close to our house. And then I was looking online last night to see if there was anything in the, in the news. Nothing was being reported yet.
You just need to get that next story.
There's plenty of stories of other hit and runs, but not this one. So it's like they will report on it. So maybe it just takes a day for them to get the information. But
it's the weekend.
Yeah. So maybe it'll be
these
there
poor newspaper people. Like, there must be 6 people working at the Denver Post anymore, and all people do in the comments is dump on their spelling errors and things. Yeah. And all I'm thinking is, you know, I don't think this is the problem. I don't think that's the problem. But
But anyways, that was the story about last night. Is that, you know, I just drove through the intersection where it happened. And there's the guy, looks like a car took out a stop sign.
There's a lot of that just crazy desperation sort of stuff that's happening in Denver now, I feel like, where people are just, I mean, we both are, we both are doing okay, and it's been extremely difficult for both of our families just getting through all this, I can't imagine someone, who maybe lost their job, who's got all these pressures every direction, and yet every time you turn around, you're getting nickel and dime to death by the city.
Yep.
You're getting hassled by the cops or whatever. I mean, it's just, people are pissed off.
No, it's been
and I think it's just to push some people over the edge into some really erratic and strange behavior lately. And just, I feel like we see this stuff all the time now in Denver. It wasn't necessarily the case a couple of years ago, but
And
I don't want to go down this rabbit hole necessarily, but
we'll just say that hopefully we're maybe coming towards the end of the craziest
times.
I was telling you, I got my first vaccination yesterday, so
showed off the band-aid and everything.
I'm on my way. So we found we got a tip from a friend who basically said this place has extra shots, so they're trying to get people to come down because they were going to have to get rid of them. So we had to be able to move quickly. But
this is such a strange dystopian game that we're playing.
It is. Well, and then I tried to do the same. I tried to send it to you, and I think by the time I sent it to you, they'd shut down
altogether.
So, But, they were telling us, they're like, well, you could see too on the appointment schedule, they had like 40 to 50, they had time slots with 40 to 50 available that no one showed up for.
So there's got to be a better way.
There has to be. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like, did I jump in line a little bit? Maybe, but they were going to have to throw this shot out if I didn't get
it. Did you push an old lady out of the way?
No.
Okay,
it's just a disabled Korean War veteran. That's it.
Jeez, man.
Yeah.
Asshole. So what else is going on?
I wanted to talk a little bit about I think this is probably the time to talk about it, is that that safari car that we both saw.
Yeah, so we've been
because I have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, meaning to talk to you all about this a couple cycles ago.
Yeah,
cycles,
a couple auction cycles ago.
All right, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That sounds better. On Bring a Trailer. Doug is opening a beer here. Are we drinking a brews beer? I see one brews beers.
Unfortunately, not today. We need to probably replenish our stock on.
That's not a brews beer.
It is a Belgian beer, although it's made here in Colorado.
No, I was looking at the big can.
That's a Guinness.
It's a Guinness. Yeah. Okay, yeah, brews shares the same.
Some leftover St. Patrick's Day stuff. As we were kind of rambling, a few weeks back there was the first time I've ever seen a 997-911 converted to a safari stock.
Just to set the base on here, 997.1, I want to say it was like an 05, 06, it was an 07 or 08. but a just a, you know, Carrera S, mm-hmm. standard, you know, manual transmission, nice car. Started from a nice car, probably yeah. should have said.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, a car, but a car even today with the elevated pricing is probably in the, we'll say 40,000 easy.
Right? Yeah, depending. I mean, maybe you know, the nicest one in the country's, you know, 45 or 50 right now. Yeah, I would yeah. think, you know.
So that's, I'd be comfortable saying this is at least like 37. That's 40.
Well, and if I remember, this was a pretty nice example to start with. So let's even call it 40,000. Let's okay. say, you know. But I want to say it started at 60,000 miles when they did that. Well, let me just stop here by saying, there is a historical precedent for Safari 911. Specifically, this is Rothmans, was it the 964 that raced in the Paris Supercar Rally? And but
yeah,
as far as
I think even a late body G body. So
okay, say, yeah, yeah, I think yeah. you're right. But as yeah. far as I know, there was yeah. never any sort of rally program that you know surrounded the. Or Safari. No,
I think the two most famous, you know, are these Rothman 911s.
Yeah,
and they took the 959 to.
Well, there was of course that was the
Paris Dakar sort of
ultimate.
Rally. Yeah, as far as I know, there was never an official class.
No,
or World Rally Champion.
And so when you start with that knowledge,
yeah.
I excuse my sort of the way I sort of process this car, but so yeah, basically it was a Safarized. But this wasn't a Lee Keen, you know, special. As far as I know, this was just done well by this seller.
Yeah, by all accounts, done well.
Yeah. So, but I think the car had 80 or 90,000 miles on it at this point. I think it had 20 or 30,000 since the Safarification. I was shocked. No, again, it was yeah. done right, but you had your typical rally lights. It had the lift. I don't even think it had aftermarket wheels. I want to say it had the original Lobster fork wheels, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it did. But
is nicely as a Safari not done by a well-known name is going to come up with?
Exactly. Well, I mean, and I even heard, you know, some people were speculating that, like, for example, I think the bar on the front, like, they had a sort of a, you know, bash bar uh-huh. you know, type thing on the front.
Yeah,
all custom.
Custom.
And right. could have been $30,000
right.
by itself
right.
in terms
right.
of work. So, no, but knowing that, I mean, we're used
driven, to, use this car.
Use, absolutely. Yeah. And we all know, like, you know, you can, you know, the cost of doing something like this, a project or a restoration
yeah.
or something like that, you may never get that money
yeah.
back. And I'm not saying this person even did, but they did get it. I mean, they got a big number out of this.
$121,000, I think it was,
amazing.
Which is just
yeah.
shocking.
Yeah.
So probably more than at least three times what that car was worth, and probably maybe close to four times what that car was worth. So
yeah.
basically, you're telling me that thing had, what would that be, $80,000 in upgrades? I don't see it. I think someone just fell in love with it, and maybe a couple guys fell in love with it. We're going to come back to this idea, too, of when it's a reserve auction, how it really takes two interested parties. It doesn't matter how wonderful the car is.
Yeah.
But $121,000 is all the money.
I was really surprised, but it's probably the only 997, you know, Safari 911 out there. It's one of one.
And let's hope it stays that way. But we're going to run out of 964s eventually.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
it's
yeah.
one of the rarer 911, maybe the rarest 911.
Yeah. I think it only has a 4-year like production.
Yeah, so we can't use all those
between Singer and everyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, all the Singers are you know, they start
964.
964.
Yeah. yeah, I mean, but there aren't that many of them.
There aren't many to begin with.
But don't get me wrong, this is cool. I just, when I see, I cringe a little. I own the Launch Edition 2005, the Carrera S way back in the day. Beautiful car. It's like clashing colors to me to see that in a 997.
Yeah, and I think you're well on the record in terms of your disdain for these types of projects. I think
not all of them, but most of them.
Yeah, I think I may be a little bit more open minded. Although I kind of agree, I almost would rather have had a nicer, just preserve, you know, 997.
Three.
Yeah,
or $121,000
just to see this one. But I've heard that these things, especially the older, if you go back to like a G body,
yeah.
Safari car, that there's like the way that they're set up with the rear engine, the
yeah.
you know, the way
yeah.
they're hung out is that like you actually get a lot of fun, you know, sliding them around. Like
right,
you actually get a lot of great, you know, dynamics,
right,
you know,
right.
from control, and that's really enjoyable for the people who
yeah.
have them.
So. Of course, once you get to the 964 model, there was the Carrera 4 for the first time. So
yeah,
some of them
you could have an all-wheel drive.
I guess I haven't really thought about that too much, but there must
yeah.
be some of each.
But this
each
one,
camp.
The one we're talking about was just a.
I don't even think it was a 4S or a 4.
Yeah.
This was a Carrera S, so the two-wheel.
Yeah.
The step-up two-wheel drive
car.
So
at that point, what they basically are, they're like high-performance dune buggies because it's like, you know, the old classic Volkswagen-based
yeah,
dune buggy
again,
has the engine hanging out over the back axle.
Why one tool to do everything when you could get, for that amount of money, a 981 GT4 and a
like a side by side
Geländewagen or something I just don't see them. I mean, that was a $50,000 car to make a good day.
So this brings me to my point, my new idea. Why don't we see more of this, for example? Yeah. So along those lines, okay, instead of taking sports cars and making them ready to go off-roading, why aren't we taking, there are all of these crossovers and there are all these things like the Subaru Crosstrek, which would be perfect for this.
Yeah.
Take the car that's already got the clearance and is already high, tune the engine, put some put some coilovers on it.
Yeah. A lot less precious. I guess it's just...
Yeah, but why not? Why not do that? Why not?
Makes more sense.
Why not take old Tiguans? You know, you can hot rod these engines.
The GTI, maybe that's what I'll do. But I just don't need to see a 997 just going out like that. Sorry, that's all I've got to say.
So would you feel better if it was like a hot rodded crossover than turned into...
That wouldn't bother me in the least. There's something, I don't know, about a Porsche that's just...
Yeah.
I guess I'm still, you know, that 12-year-old kid where it's just sort of this, you know, this unattainable goal, you know, where it was something sort of sacred
about
it. You're
not ready to find that since you've already owned a 911, so it is attainable.
Oh, well, yeah, you know, of course, I downgraded to a Cayman now, but it's, speaking of Caymans, I think it was the last episode or the episode before, we talked, I was really perplexed and sort of, I questioned why none of the, nowhere, not a big news outlet, not Motor Trend, not Car and Driver, not... You know, not a YouTuber had done an instrumented test of the PDK 718 GT4. It really bothered me because
we're changing quicker here completely.
But I mean, I know it's going to be quicker than my manual GT4.
Yeah.
But today having both available, would I buy the PDK? No, because I think the manual is going to hold its value better. I enjoy driving it for a number of reasons, but. Yeah. The PDK GT4 718 is shockingly fast at car. Now this is Car and Driver. So this is, for me, Car and Driver is always sort of the benchmark.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time I had those panels in the back of the magazine memorized, as I'm sure you did. I mean, some kids didn't know, you know, baseball stats. That was, I could tell you what a Monte Carlo SS did, you know, in the quarter mile in 86 or whatever. Sorry, I lost my train.
That's okay.
I'm going to cut this out. So the 718 GT4 does 0 to 60 now, wait part, 3.3 seconds per Car and Driver, the quarter mile 11.6. I think Car and Driver gave the manual one 3.8 and 11.8 or 11.9. So this is, it's interesting. It's quick off the line, and both cars have launch control. But then you have to get that one shift in, or at least one shift before, maybe two shifts for the quarter mile. And I think that's why. Yeah. You know, there's still some difference, but so not as quick in the quarter mile as I thought, but 0 to 60,
so much quicker in 0 to 60.
It's exactly what we predicted. We figured it would be about a half a second. I think I think we said 3/10 to a half a second. It is right there. It's a half a second faster than the manual, and I loved it.
Well, when we're down talking under 4 second range, I mean that difference between just the pulling the the paddle makes a big difference.
But we know the difference. Yeah. You know, when
even
you get
a quick manual.
Shift, yeah. When you get that load, you know, to your point, you know, you're really, I mean, a tenth of a second is actually quite a difference at 3 seconds or whatever. So was relieved to finally see those numbers, and
you can sleep well at night again.
Yeah, no, I'm good, and good for those PDK GT4 owners, but I think they're missing something with that car.
Yeah. Well, the take I got from a lot of those, from that and from even when Matt Farah was driving both of them, said though that it's interesting that they didn't seem to think that they're both different experiences, but they didn't really seem to make a comment on which one was better.
No. Well, they basically, everyone sort of leaves that, like, if you want a manual, buy a manual. If you want the automatic, get the automatic. But, I mean, God, 3.3 seconds. I mean, this, very in the very recent past, that was supercar territory, you know. That's just shockingly quick. I mean, that's faster than a 997 turbo. I would say even a 997.2 turbo, maybe not the S, but that is a very fast car.
Blistering quick.
And that's the sort of the last thing on the list of priorities for a GT4. It's just such a good car. But
It's not even its best party trick.
It's just, you know, and it'll never give you that all-wheel drive, you know, turbo, whatever, you know, push you back feel, but it is definitely getting those times down.
At 3.3 seconds, it's pushing you back pretty big.
When you're in a turbo, though, when that turbo kicks in, there's that momentary sort of
that's true. It's like
pulling
a
of the G, if you own a car.
Tidal wave of torque that's just like shoving winding down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's why we all know that the GT4 here that's in the garage now is faster than the base came in that it replaced. But, you know, under certain circumstances, the old one felt faster. If you were in that power band in the turbo and you were up in the mountains, or maybe this one starts to suffer a little bit. I mean, there's something about a turbo. I mean, I'm not one of those people that it's that, you know, NA or nothing. You know, the turbos certainly have their appeal.
I know you haven't had this for very long. I know you haven't driven it that much, but have you, you probably haven't really even taken it up into the higher altitude mountains yet. You've just been in like,
That's
kind of in your golden game.
Pretty much.
Okay. Cause I know when I talked to our friend Will Power, his car, he says he can absolutely feel the difference.
Oh yeah.
Power up at altitude.
You could feel it in the turbo, in the Cayman that I had, 718, but it wasn't as pronounced. I don't feel it as much in this car as I did in my, as I remember it in my 9871 Carrera S, which is same motor as Will would have in his, similar to what he has in his 4. And I haven't noticed it quite as much in this car. I think just because your foot's not as far into it. You're not, you're flooring it less, right? Okay, it definitely is less pronounced.
But going back to your 997, you could feel it at altitude.
Yeah,
could you feel it even in the canyons that you like to drive in, which aren't that high? But
toward the top, you get about halfway up, and you'd start to feel it. I mean, let's not forget either that the 9871 Carrera S that I had, the specs were, even though on paper it had 55 more horsepower, the specs were almost exactly the same as the base came in, the 2017 that I had later.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're sort of starting with similar power, and then the turbo's losing less. So I think it was most pronounced in that 997. I mean, still plenty of power or whatever. And I mean, everyone else, you know,
everyone else is feeling the same thing. Yeah, I was just wondering if you felt it individually with yours. So.
Yeah, this just has, I think, that much more overhead. But
did you ever take it up to like any of the big passes, like Eisenhower? Or
not the GT4. Are you talking about the 997? I'm sure I did. I don't remember. But that of the three cars was the most pronounced. I mean, we've heard about the manual Honda Fit we had when we first moved here.
Yeah.
And that was a car that you would have to leave that car pegged in third to get up some of the stretches, to keep up with traffic on some of the stretches on like Floyd Hill and all that going up west.
Yeah. Floyd Hill is one of the big first steep.
But it never fell behind. It never, you know, it would get you there. It was just, it took everything it had kind of thing. So, after living with that for a couple of years, I guess, you know, everything else.
Well, okay, so good. So now we know. I'm glad we've got this established. The PDK GT4 is extremely fast.
It's fast. It's just not very quick, but it's great. But speaking of the 718 GT4, last thing I want to say, I should probably take a break. We all follow Bring a Trailer, of course. And now I was a little confused because it was the second 718 GT4 they've had, but couldn't find the first one anywhere until someone pulled it up. It wasn't referencing to it anywhere on the website, so people thought this was the first one. But anyway, 718 GT4.
They don't usually say like we've featured this model before.
No, but if you search for the GT4, everything should come up. But only the 981s were coming up. So
did it come up when you just
No. So maybe they have a distinction that they haven't quite fleshed out between the two as far as logging it, but. Someone put about a week ago, it was black wheels.
It was like all black.
Yep. Otherwise a very lightly optioned 718 GT4. I think the sticker was 102 something, which is about cheap as you can, little as you can spend.
If you were to go back to our configurator episode, you would realize that's almost nothing on it.
I think that it only had two or three options. I think it had the painted wheels. It had maybe Bose. But it didn't have sport chrono. It didn't have the dual zone climate control or the dimming mirrors or even a lot of the stuff my relatively lightly spec'd car does have.
Yeah.
But that said, it's still a $102,000 car, and there are only three manual GT4s new on dealer lots in the country right now. So it's obviously a car that's in demand.
Or underproduced. It's one of those.
Yeah, one of those. So, I mean, it's not like you can just go in and buy one of these right now. And so I think everyone was shocked when the bidding only went up to 93.
Yeah.
It was a no sale. I'm guessing, well, the guy said the seller in the comments said that he set the reserve at cheaper than the cheapest listed price for sale in the country. So I'm guessing it was probably 100. Mm-hmm. But then someone else made the comment, well, there's the buyer's premium. So, well, you know, the $93,000
for the sake of argument. For the sake of argument, if he was setting it at 100, it's then 105,000
yeah.
for that.
But,
and,
But here's the thing. This car had been paint protected, PPF'd on, you know, at least half the panels. And then it had had been ceramic coated. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a $3,000 or $4,000 proposition right there.
Yeah.
You know, I think it had less than 2,000 miles on it, right? I mean, it was basically new, you know, 1,500 miles maybe. Absolutely, the car should have sold. But as we mentioned before, you know, you got to take, you got to have two people who want that thing. But I thought it was a desirable looking car. It was it was mainstream color. It looked great.
All black.
And, there was no real reason for it not to have sold, except for if you're the only one that's bidding, you're never going to win it, no matter how much you want to spend. So I bet that car was sold offline for, you know, closer to 100. But
I'd love to know how many BAT auctions like end sort of offline is like,
well, there's,
like
that. There's got to be, right? I mean, there's got to be people doing deals.
You got their names and information. It's like, you know, reach out and be like, hey, how close were you?
I don't know what their
how far would you
policy
have gone, that kind of thing. Well, they've got it. I think they have to for the seller.
Well, you're paying money just to list, so I don't feel too terrible for BAT. If you know you were to do, a back
deal. I think all you have to do is you just get the two or three highest bidders and be like, hey, like, you know, we didn't quite hit reserve. Like, where, how much further maybe were you guys willing to go?
Yeah, no, it's someone will, it'll find a home. And, you know, that seller wasn't really involved in the comments. You know, he didn't give the backstory.
That's always a problem.
Yeah, I don't remember if there was even a driving video. I just think had the car been presented a little differently.
That's another thing, if I can, I'm just going to get on my soapbox.
Yeah.
They should almost insist, especially for a car like any of the cars that have these great engines that we all sort of fantasize about, absolutely get the sound in there. You know?
And if there was a video, I apologize, there could have been one. But it was just, it was light on comments, it was light on bids.
Yeah.
You know, I did use the opportunity to advertise the podcast. So if you happen to be listening to the podcast because you saw my comment and bring a trailer,
welcome to the show.
We had a pretty good run of downloads lately and all over the world. It's really, it's been really interesting.
That's why I call this the worldwide headquarters.
Yeah, it's crazy. We're small,
welcome to our entire international
growing. Welcome. So, yeah. We should take a break and we'll come back. We've got lots more to talk about.
So we're back. We're going to talk a little bit now. It's kind of a question that's been sort of, you know, puzzling Ryan and I lately, and maybe maybe you guys as well. But like, you know, I feel like when we were growing up and we were kind of into this car culture thing and, you know, reading about cars, that there used to be truly awful cars.
Yeah.
Cars that really had no business being on the roads or selling at all. Like, you know, these companies shouldn't have even been in business. What's
like a Daewoo. Do you all remember the Daewoo?
Daewoo?
They recruited college kids to sell these. Like, there was no dealer network. I believe their big model at the time was called the Nubira or the Nubira, which sounded like some African princess or something. It had a strange... It was just everything about it was, I guess it was Chinese. It was a Chinese or it was Korean? It must have been Korean. It was Korean before, you know, some of the Korean brands So it was called Daewoo. That was a terrible car.
That was a terrible. I mean, we're talking about a car that's so far below.
Yeah, the K cars, the Chrysler K cars.
Yeah. Well,
although there were some exceptions to that.
The K car, I feel like, it might be indicative of how, you know, that was kind of the malaise era of the American car company.
All right, so there were a lot of bad cars.
So they weren't, my point is, they were pretty bad, but they weren't far off their competitors.
Probably.
Daewoo was far below their competitors.
I am a fan of that old wood bodied K car town and country,
cool. Yeah, ironically, cool.
Yeah.
But like the Yugo.
Ironically, all the rich people had that car. If they didn't have a Mercedes SL, that was the move. You got one of those old LeBaron, So what was the next one?
Yugo. I mean, Yugo's
were
terrible. Yeah, I mean, that was as good as a communist country was going to do, but, you know, they were terrible.
Though. Yeah, yeah. Like, people get romantic about those, I think, now on YouTube, but they had like cardboard pieces. You know what I mean? It's just...
They get it's like a nostalgia thing, though. I mean, and then because it's hard to find a good Yugo.
Yeah.
So it's probably harder to find it. My baseline is always like, is the car more or less rare than a Ferrari F40? You know, they made about 1,600 Ferrari F40s. Figure 1,400 of them are still on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet there's less good Yugos on the road.
It's, I mean, it's been years since I've seen one.
But those, and then, I mean, people are always, not necessarily here in the States, but over in Germany, people are really nostalgic about those Trabants.
And
they're terrible.
There's the Lada, right?
Yeah.
And all those, they were pretty awful because they were sort of this technology frozen in time for 40 years or whatever, and wasn't that good going in, but just like pot metal switches and just awful.
And it makes, and not to get off too much on a tangent, but it makes sense that communist countries built terrible cars because there was no competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the car you bought. This is the
city. No, that, and you were glad to have it.
You were lucky to have that.
Yeah.
But it's there's no excuse for when it was like a a free market economy and they were making terrible cars.
Of course, you could argue if you ever watch any travel videos or whatever in the former Soviet republics. Still a lot of those old cars, those Ladas is it GAZ, the Gaz cars and all those.
Yeah.
A lot of them are still,
still running,
still the common car, still the taxi. So maybe they were awful, but they were repairable.
I think they were awful, but yeah, very simplistic. So
yeah, because if you see the roads over there,
It's kind of the same thing. There's a lot of farms that have old tractors going.
That's true. Yeah. Maybe their beauty wasn't their simplicity, but
yeah.
I mean the last really bad car that I drove was a rental. It was I think a Chevy Malibu, but it was must have been the 4-cylinder, and there must have been something wrong with it. It was a Hertz car. It had 20,000-30,000 miles on it, where it literally couldn't get up the mountains, and I mean, the rest of the package was no great prize either.
Yeah.
That was probably the last bad car, but I think had it been running okay, it would have been tolerable.
Well, so let's break it down a little bit. So the engine was bad. It was gutless, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the car was pretty bad too.
The interior quality, the materials.
I don't care what anyone says. I mean, I know the American car companies have made great leaps, but your everyday Hertz level
spec
Chevy.
Yeah.
Or it's not that great. And I'm sure they're not putting all their investment into their, their large sedans anymore or whatever, but it's just there's a difference. And you could have a blindfold on, between say hopping in a Camry and a comparable GM product still to this day. Now the gulf is narrower than ever, but
it's narrower than ever. Yeah. There's no excuse why it's not closed yet. I mean, that's always kind of been one of the amazing things about the Toyotas and the Hondas from the early 90s until now is that they're delivering the same product.
Yeah.
And it's just better in every way. I don't know how to explain it. Everything you touch is nicer. It's more quality feel. It's that. But, there was always, when do you think this, are we making a statement that there aren't any more bad cars or there's fewer?
Well, certainly there are better cars and worse cars, right?
But there's always a range. But the bottom's a lot closer to the mean.
Yeah, the baseline has definitely come. You don't really have too many of those outliers anymore either. I think there are a couple of exceptions. Every once in a while, there'll still be some quirky car. I just found out that Mitsubishi was still selling some little hatchback until recently.
Yeah.
It was the cheapest car available in the country.
Okay.
I bet that's a terrible car. I think it had something like 67 horsepower. I was shocked to find
Mitsubishi
out.
In North America, if it actually is good.
Mitsubishi.
And I agree, it probably also looks
Mitsubishi has a storied, a storied past, and hopefully they'll get their mojo back.
Yeah.
Speaking
of, did you hear, this is a little off tangent, but so Mitsubishi, because of Brexit, Mitsubishi has decided to pull out of the UK market.
They're
not going to sell cars off. So they have apparently the Mitsubishi of UK has a tremendous collection.
Yeah.
Some of the more storied cars we're talking about in there.
If the 3000 GT gets you excited, you should go check it out
it's a bunch of Lancers.
They had rally cars. What would you say that from the late 80s through maybe the mid to late 90s, the Japanese car companies were just killing it.
Yeah.
I mean, even Suzuki and Subaru.
Pre-stock market bubble that they had going on.
Some of those Mitsubishis were fantastic.
And Starion.
I was on BAT, and they've had a lot of old, Hondas of that era. Mm-hmm. And or Nissans. And you think back, we've talked about this before, but Honda, had the CR, just the Civic was such a great car.
Yeah.
Even in its most basic form. CRX, the Accord, the Prelude. And then, toward the end of that, I guess, and then a few years, even stuff like the S2000. Mm-hmm. Nissan, in 1990, had the four-door sports car and the Maxima. They had the 300ZX. Infiniti had just been introduced. They had the amazing Q45. All of the Japanese car companies were killing it. And they were making interesting stuff, and we weren't even getting the interesting stuff.
I know, we weren't even getting the most interesting stuff. They still when the Skyline was.
But all that stuff is the car, landscape has been cleansed of all those outliers, all those interesting things. But this Mitsubishi, which a car I didn't even know was sold, was one of those. So what else don't we know about them? Maybe there are terrible cars. I mean, they're just not part of our
Well, by definition, in a free market, if a car is terrible, we probably won't hear about it much because it won't sell and it won't be around for very long.
I mean, but even like Kia,
it has to be bad where it's noticeable, but enough people are still buying them to survive. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so. Kia, maybe would have had that label not too long ago, but now this is the company that's making the Telluride, a car wealthy people are on waiting lists for just because it's an objectively good vehicle,
Hyundai. I mean, Hyundai, Kia.
Yeah.
They used to be kind of like, they used to live in this range of being at the bottom of the car market.
Well, Kia, I think
premium products.
Well, Kia, I think that was sort of the cheap car to Hyundai, right?
There's a time when Hyundai was the cheap car. They decided they needed a more entry level brand. Right. So they brought in Kia.
Equus and the Genesis.
Now Hyundai's has models taking on, the best side of Europe.
But I would argue Kia has the much better design language right now. And in fact, they just redid their logo. And so I thought it was very interesting because I just saw a Kia Telluride with a temp plate, a paper plate here in Colorado. And But what's interesting is it must just be a 1 year thing as they transition to the new logo. The cars that are still their new cars but have the old logo, they've blacked out the logo.
Oh yeah,
that's one approach, right? Because who wants to buy the car with the old logo, right?
I guess. Although they do have like an all blacked out appearance for that.
Well, maybe that was the only reason they. And then it seems it was so dark you couldn't see what it said. Anyway, it seemed kind of says the guy with the Porsche letters on the back of his car in black.
All
blacked
out, yeah.
That was an option. I forgot they had.
That's
right. Let's pay for that.
Everything will be an option.
That's right.
You were just offline. You were just telling me how the little red stripe on your steering wheel costs $150 extra.
So I believe that's. Yeah. Don't quote me on that.
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Because you can either get the steering wheel in leather or Alcantara. And you had commented this car that was a bring a trailer. One of sort of the oddities about it was that it had the leather steering wheel and no 12 o'clock marker and a contrasting color. And yeah, I think you can spec that color, but I don't know if you pay for it, if you just have to spec it off the check that, it probably is $150.
But the point is every little detail could theoretically be an expensive option.
For sure. But back to the shitty car conversation. What's the last shitty car you drove? Like could have been a rental. It could have been a car, I mean,
I was thinking, I wish I'd thought about that more before we started. Let me think about it for a second. You keep talking, what other bad cars have you driven? You've driven more cars than me lately because you've rented a lot lately. So what other rental car?
That was really bad. And I'm trying to stay away from cars that just were like in bad condition or had something mechanically wrong.
For the sake of this conversation, we're talking about a car that's like, pretty much brand new, but it's just terrible.
Yeah, what was really terrible? What's the big Infiniti? The QX75 or something?
The big SUV.
The big one. The one that's the Armada, the Pathfinder Armada.
Yeah.
Not a bad car in that it felt like a car 10 years older than it is. That from the tech to the logic of the layouts and the, what's the word? The interaction, the human machine interaction. What's the word I'm looking
ergonomics.
For? Ergonomics, and it was kind of fun and big V8 body on frame or whatever. But I hated it. Pretty much everything about that car. Otherwise, it had terrible use of space. Mm-hmm. It was a truck, obviously. But just terrible. Monochromatic screens. Mm-hmm. Just very, very much 10 years ago and probably wasn't that great 10 years ago. A lot of people love them. I think they discount them heavily. So here you get this big luxury SUV, at a price point less than, say, an Escalade or, Range Rover or something.
Yeah.
That was probably but even that wasn't terrible. I kind of enjoyed driving it. I mean, it was more fun than driving another Camry or a Ford Escape, Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's been a while. And I think that's why I brought this topic up because, I mean, when I think of the bad cars, I have to go back to almost my childhood. Cars seem to rust a lot less now, too, which is kind of nice. But
everyone out there for that rust package, I guess. I can't think of a bad car I've driven recently, I've had a few rental cars. They've actually all been pretty solid.
Yeah,
I had a Fusion hybrid recently. That was really good.
You get the weirdest cars.
So the Fusion hybrid I drove was pretty good.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one car I guess I drove recently that wasn't good that was still being sold as in that configuration pretty recently was a Smart car.
You drove a smart car recently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I drove. I was part of that Car2Go system, which I'm not sure is even around anymore. I haven't seen them.
Okay.
I haven't seen them parked on the streets anymore. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, on paper, it's a rear-wheel drive, rear-engine, European coupe.
What more could you want?
What more could you want?
Yeah, so much
more. With a sequential transmission, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, God. It would have been so better with just a standard automatic.
What an odd choice for just the person on the street to, like, here's a sequential transmission.
I know. That is kind of a story because it's like, you know, semi-performance oriented, but it's really not. I mean,
they did make the Brabus smart car after all.
I've seen that one. I've seen one driving around.
Yeah, I have too. There's one in Denver. The rims are all beat to shit.
The one I've seen is silver. Is that the
same? Yeah. I have some pictures.
I think that's
that didn't come up when I asked Siri to show me sports cars.
Two doors. Yeah. It's like a three-cylinder engine. Which, first of all, doesn't get very great mileage.
Same as the new Nürburgring...
Darling, the GR.
Depending on how many blow up, but
That was just... It was so somehow underpowered and yet also not fuel efficient and also just like... Just a weird sort of rev range on it. I mean, just terrible. I mean, and the fact that it was rear engine...
12-inch wheels.
Rear-engined, rear-wheel drive, but still not like... I mean, so you have the engine over the power wheels, but still no traction. I couldn't get it. I had trouble. I had to get out and push one out. I was driving it somewhere. Yeah. And I was stuck in like a snowbank, and I had to... I could do it. I was actually able to with rocking it, I was actually able to get it out and into the street where I could actually drive it away. But,
well, I can't think of a worse car random people off the street in and try to get around the snowy city, but
and two seats, that's it, with a little bit of cargo space behind it. So, you know, I feel like there are cars that aren't that much bigger that have an actual fourth, you know,
and not more expensive either. Are they still being sold? I don't even
know. There's been since now. There's been a new generation of smart car, but I don't know. I think those are sold in the United States.
I feel like they've absorbed them into Mercedes dealerships again, and I feel really terrible for all these dealers who were obligated to spend all this money on new storefronts and all that.
Of course,
I feel that same way about the Alpha dealers. You know, I feel that same way about the probably some of the Mini dealers.
Do you think the auto corporations help with that? Do they help with like rebranding and like?
No, from what I understand, and this is why you see so few of these like sort of retro dealers, because you know every few years they have the cycle where they basically, as part of their franchise agreement, they have to reskin the whole place,
like rebrand.
And I guess this all worked out pretty well for American Pickers over the years, but it's why you don't see a lot of old stuff being used now, because they have to maintain these brand, you know, this brand compliance and all that, and it can be very, very expensive. Yeah. And it's beyond just, you know, swapping out the logo and the sign out front. Now it can mean, you know, redoing the whole building. I mean, I think Porsche put this on their dealers recently.
Yeah.
There's a dealership here in Denver called Prestige. They would pair Audi and Porsche at dealers, so it was like it would say Audi plus Porsche.
Yeah.
Well, this is back when they're working on the 914 and all this with Volkswagen. But this is one of those sort of old dealerships, a legacy dealer. Mm-hmm. They probably could have used a refresh or whatever. But they basically had to build a whole new building, to keep their franchise. This is kind of an old franchise, a big uniform look, the big red lettering and the silver. I love me some Porsche, but I feel like those are they're not really forward thinking looking buildings. They look like they're out of the '90s to me. They look like '90s office buildings, but whatever. I think it's hard out there for a dealer. I really do. Unless you're really one of the big guys, I think you're forever jumping through. Now, again, I mean, there probably are not a lot of poor car dealers in this country, but I feel like you're constantly jumping through hoops for these you know, for the privilege of selling these cars. And that's great when you're selling Porsche, but what happens when you're selling smart cars? Hmm. Anyway, discussion for another time.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
So bad cars. I think I have to go back to my childhood. I grew up, we had a series of diesel Volkswagens, you know, when they were pushing up 50 horsepower or whatever. But even those felt upscale in a way at the time. Mm-hmm. They were European, you know. Mm-hmm. Then once in a while I'd get into a friend's car, you know.
On your friend's Corsica when you got into it.
Well, there were a lot of those sort of like mid-80s, like the Chevy Celebrity, that, you know, things like that were pretty bad. Pretty bad,
What was that?
The Citation, there was the Citation X. you know, a lot of people dump on the American Motors cars, but I had a couple friends.
Why did they agree to that as the name of the car, the Citation?
Well, yeah.
What is that?
Yeah. No, I because you'd never get one in it, I guess. I don't know. But, you know.
It's really ironic, yeah.
The American Motors, they had the AMC Eagle, which was sort of the precursor, whatever you want to call it, to a lot of the Subarus. What the Subarus are today, a lot of the crossovers.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was not a bad car. That was a pretty well-built car. I mean, it was... American Motors is always a distant fourth or whatever, but I'm trying to think, even back, what was really bad? You know, I had friends at school, high school that had, crappy old, Isuzu iMarks and things like that were pretty bad. But I mean,
I feel like this is the cards right up your alley. Had you ever been in one of those, I think they called Sterlings?
Yeah, have we not talked about this? I've always been fascinated with Sterling. Yeah, the A27.
That was like the Honda and the Rover?
Yes, it was basically the European Accord, which was more like our Legend than our Accord. Yeah. The Sterling, it was a British car. I guess I don't know anything if it's this old British mark or if it was sort of something newer that they came up with to cross brand cars or whatever, but... I think it was one of those old British Leyland brands, come to think of it. They like Morris, and
that's what I was
they would absorb Rover, all these small companies as they go to business.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah. And
not Land Rover, but they were Rover cars.
Rover cars, yeah. And in fact, I think they may have been badged as Rovers in the UK, these Sterlings.
Yeah.
So I think Sterling was just sort of a
export name.
And it had this sort of like, I don't know, lion and a crest or whatever. Yeah. But the reason it was pretty good was... It was like basically an accurate Legend, but it was completely different on the inside. It had like all the British electronics, if I'm not mistaken. All the switchgear was different than the. It's just there were like twice as many buttons, if I recall. But I thought they were cool, and there was sort of a sporty model that aped that sort of white over gray, like the Acura Legend, like the Mercedes often of the era had that gray cladding on the bottom over white. They looked good. They were. Cool.
They do look good, but the audience can't see this because we're audio only. But I was hanging my head as you explained how they let the British company do the wiring.
Don't mark, I think that's what the story was.
We'll go with that for now. But why in a joint venture like that? Why let the British do the styling and let the Japanese company do all the wiring?
Yeah, absolutely. They so were really actually cool. Works, they really had a lot of wood in the inside. There was one on Bring a Trailer Cars and Bids recently, and I want to say sold for $12,000 or $15,000. It had like 31,000 original miles, which was pretty cool. In my mind, I always lump that car with the Peugeot. Was it the MI16?
Yeah.
And the other models of the era, the 405, the 505. And then also the Alpha, what was it? It was the 164 or the Milano and then the 164. Mm-hmm. And I always sort of group those cars.
The angular Scorpio.
Yeah.
The four-door Americorps.
Yeah. Kind of in there too. And, it's just, again, a lot of those interesting cars are gone.
And the Eagle, wasn't there a joint car?
Well, that's
Eagle,
a whole other. I would sort of put those in a different category because there was the Eagle, there was the Chrysler.
Yeah, no. Well, the LH cars, right?
That's the LH cars.
Yeah,
but Eagle was part of the American Motors.
There was even a generation before that where there was an Eagle that I think was like a joint.
Yeah, it was
Eagle and Renault.
And then there was the Talon, the Eagle Talon, remember the TSI?
Yeah.
But that, much like Hyundai in their Genesis sort of offshoot, that's I believe how it started. It was American Motors, and then Eagle, I think a car. It was this hatchback, this lifted hatchback or whatever, if I'm not mistaken. And then Eagle then became sort of line kind of within itself.
Yeah.
That's what they needed to do then. But before they died out, they were making... I mean, there was no more American Motors brand. Basically, at that point, it turned into Jeep and Eagle.
Those were the two survivors. Yeah.
Right.
So is that where the Chrysler 5-point, Diamond symbol comes from? Was it because it was all those five remaining car companies that were still under it?
I never thought about that. The Pentastar.
Yeah, the Pentastar. I feel like
it's called the Pentagram.
Because there was like five companies, and then you're right, the only ones that survived were basically just, now Jeep.
Well, I don't know, but there was Studebaker. I mean, there was a lot going on. They made Studebaker. There was an Avanti connection to American Motors, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I think Avanti was a model for Studebaker. Then they eventually someone spun off. I think someone bought the rights to it.
Yeah, and then they were making them in the old Duesenberg factory in Indiana or something. Yeah, we're going down the crazy route. Yeah, you're still listening. We talked a bit earlier about how many international listeners we have. Yeah. And we have a ton, and it's really cool. Yeah. But sometimes I wonder, what are you getting out of this?
I know, this is some deep American car company archaeology right now.
Right, yeah.
Look into these companies.
Right. Yeah. It's
all these horribly mediocre companies that were surviving.
Well, we all had them, and some of the people are probably listening to countries that didn't even have that. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's always kind of interesting whenever companies get together and they do joint projects. I feel like you always have an interesting result like that.
So, well, yeah, interesting is one.
Well, yeah, interesting covers a whole body of
things. But yeah, bad cars. I haven't driven a really bad car lately. Nothing that was really inherently bad. Some of the Nissans with the CVT transmissions, some of the rental Sentras are pretty awful.
Yeah.
And some of the Altimas are pretty awful, or at least up until this very latest generation. Those are pretty bad as far as new cars
go. I think Nissan is probably one of the largest companies that's still around that absolutely is overdue for like a
giant they really took a dive.
And I don't know, I don't know, they have ambitious plans from what I understand. Yeah. Like a complete model shakeout in like 5
plans years. Is just plans.
I know, and it doesn't mean that the new cars will be good. Yeah, but at least they're like, okay, we're gonna, everything's gone in 5 years, it's gonna be all
they need to bring that Mr. Nissan back, or whatever his name was, the guy with the do you remember that whole Yamamoto campaign
or something? Yeah.
Yeah. I met him at the Chicago Auto Show, I think. Yeah. Once. But
was the guy that was featured in the ads, was that actually him, or was it just an actor?
No, I think it was
him.
Well, I actually don't know. All right, we're gonna look that up. But
yeah.
Anyway, back to Nissan.
This is actually, I meant to tell you, this is kind of an ongoing segment in our little follow ups as to whether a person you talked about is either still alive or dead.
Well, or if they were those alive, for those of you who are really
sharp listeners,
close followers here, we touched on this guy Doug Llewellyn, who was the bailiff. He wasn't the bailiff. He was like the
announcer
or the legal analyst or something / announcer, right?
Yeah,
for the People's Court. Or maybe all he literally just said was the introduction. I don't really remember. But he seemed like he was 80 years old to me back when I was a kid. And I watched that show religiously after school every day.
Yeah.
Thought it was pretty cool. And I thought for sure that guy was no longer alive. Yeah. And assuming it's legitimate, I Googled him and his LinkedIn page came up. He did not view mine in return. And of course, his headshot.
He's just way too busy, man.
Well, his headshot was from probably at the height of his power. So, you know, he could be 100 now. I have no idea. Assuming that he's still alive based on his having a LinkedIn page, or unless it's a spoof, but it seemed legit. It like listed all, he's got some consulting firm now. Yeah,
what did he list as his current job?
Doug Llewellyn Productions or something. What I'm thinking, maybe we can get him on the show. And I'm not even joking, Doug.
Well, if you didn't,
I would do it just for his voice.
If you answer your LinkedIn response, we might get somewhere.
Well, people have been asking, where's our intro music? Where's our bumper or whatever? Maybe that's it. Maybe we get Doug Llewellyn to intro us.
Did he do the intro of the People's
Court? I think so, or at least the outro, you know, about, you know, both parties have this, you know, we've talked about this. But anyway,
yeah,
we might have to reach out to Mr. Llewellyn.
If you're out there,
maybe he can tell us about a bad car he's driven. You know, I picture him still driving like a Plymouth Reliant or something, like driving that to the studio every day to tape the show.
To tape the show. Oh, and when he was recording that.
Yeah.
What's the equivalent then now if he's still driving?
Gosh,
like a
what's the most generic? I mean, I kind of feel like the CRV or something taking that.
There's a house near mine that they have two almost identical white Chevy Impalas. Very basic.
There you go. That
mid-range Impala. And they're both, it's like they love this. The only person that loved this car so much that they bought like a second one.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
It's
a more uninspired.
It's one of the most generic looking things I've ever seen. Like, and it's parked, they're parked, always parked end to end on the street together.
All right. Well, they're not listening. So it's
I hope not.
It's okay. It's okay. So, I don't, maybe this is a dumb topic because I can't really, and I guess that's what I was thinking of it. It's been so long, you know, or when I do drive a bad car, it's so rare, but it's usually a Nissan.
If the audience thinks we left out any, we truly overlooked some terrible cars, send it to us either on our Instagram page or on our Facebook page.
Are you monitoring that, Doug?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Because, if someone wants a t-shirt, then I just don't want them to be.
My t-shirt. You know, exactly. Send it to either of those, either our Instagram at the steering committee, or our Facebook, the steering committee, or at our email, the steering committee podcast@gmail.com, send us a terrible car you can think of, and we'll send you a T-shirt. Send us the car and your mailing address, and we will send you.
Yeah, you can still send us what Siri gave you on your phone. Your sports car.
That's right. Let's remind audience.
Yeah,
you ask Siri to show you pictures of cars, and then you ask Siri to show you pictures of sports cars. And see if you can see any differences there.
So. It might just even send you a T-shirt. But if you want a T-shirt, probably should send your address. We have extra T-shirts right now because we had a batch that came in a little off. So we are
if you get a T-shirt, we are flush in T-shirts right now.
If you get a T-shirt, it's not quite centered. That's the story.
Can't guarantee. We don't make no guarantees about the.
But you know, how much did you pay for it? Yeah, so yeah, there you exactly. go. Do you want to take a quick break and come back?
Let's do one quick break.
And we'll be back. Okay, we're back. It's the steering committee. We've got, a few minutes left, and just wanted to gloat a little bit. I think we got some new listeners out of this. We were one of the first podcasts, at least, to talk about the Polestar 2, at least drive it. And, of course, the irony here is we could have been about a week earlier, and I just had a busy week at work and just couldn't get around to editing the thing.
We test drove the car 3 weeks ago.
But we still
got it up early, and we scooped some of the.
Some of the other guys are just talking about them now. So I wish we would have had more time with it. Maybe we will in the future, but it was kind of cool to think we were one of the first people to at least talk about it on a podcast. I'm sure there were others, but my opinion on the car hasn't changed. I still really like it. I was listening to Johnny Lieberman and Spike talk about their experience.
Yeah.
A couple weeks after us.
Yeah. Just to point that out again. Yeah. Lieberman, I feel like, was pretty brutal, and I feel like Spike appreciated it more.
Yeah, so I think Lieberman, he was more hung up on the looks, and I actually like the looks. Mm-hmm. If you buy, of course, the Polestar 1 looks better, but it is a sports car that's three times the price or whatever. So I thought
the looks, and the Polestar 1, I think, is arguably one of the best.
Yeah, it looks as good as any current in the last Volvo. Volvo sedan, but. Yeah. It was interesting to get their take, and I'm hoping we get to spend some more time with maybe a long-term test or something. But
I think that's a possibility. My man Jorge said he'll let us know when the shop opens at the actual storefront, so maybe we'll get it invited over to a grand opening.
Hopefully it's not just for some cookies and tea. We'll actually get to spend some time with
Jorge. I'll still do it if it's just cookies and tea.
I know we picked up a lot of new listeners with that episode. Again, I think because we were one of the first podcasts to spend some time with the car to talk about it. And again, I'm sorry that we could have had it earlier and it just didn't happen, but
that's okay. It's all right.
I thought we were going to be the last. So I guess I'm just pleasantly surprised that it worked out better than what we feared. But thank you again to Polestar. Hope we get another opportunity here soon. So what else is going on, or should we wrap this up?
I was going to talk real quick about, I thought about the thing I wanted to talk about.
All right.
It was,
preach.
It's come out recently about that sort of at the height of the pandemic. I can't remember exactly when, but that guy.
Sorry, that's my beer this time.
Yeah, that's not me this time. Is it
crushing metal over here? Sorry.
Who's the guy? He was driving the Gambala modified.
Oh yeah,
so GT in New York City.
New Year's Day, I think it was, right, or New Year's Eve.
Something. Yeah.
On the empty streets of Manhattan, there was this guy who. I can't remember his name, but it was driving. Yeah, so it was a Gambala.
I want to say Ben Chen or something.
That sounds right. Yeah. So this heavily modified, so $1 million on top of another $1 million car, basically.
Yeah.
He was, I don't know if he was on meth or allegedly or something.
That's what people are up in arms with is that, like, so all we know is, I mean, here's what we know for a fact. And okay, I'll put my lawyer hat on right now. The car is going extremely fast down a street. Loses control.
Showboating on an empty Manhattan street.
A relatively empty Manhattan street, but with some cars that are parked on the
road. Sure,
and it loses control and slams into one one minivan, really takes the brunt of it.
Right,
And
car keeps running?
The car kind of slides to a start or to a stop, and then he takes off. I mean, the car is trashed. It's totaled. It still can move, I guess, under its own power.
Lots of people,
cell phones go right up. They show it.
A lot of experts. On the scene.
Well, but they're not wrong. What everyone's up in arms about is that recently the Manhattan District Attorney's Office has basically announced that they're dropping all charges and that they don't have enough evidence to charge them with anything.
They have them on 50 cell phones and security cameras.
Well, so what I thought, I had to go back and look because what I couldn't remember is that, the car crashes and then it drives off.
Yeah.
But then, like, do they just find it abandoned later?
No. The cops,
a New York State trooper pulls him over, gets him out of the car.
Yeah.
So,
and they treated him with kid gloves the whole time.
Probably. I mean,
no, they did. I saw
and,
the videos.
And yeah. people who were watching him in the videos said it was apparent that he was under the influence of something. He was
certainly under the influence of falling asleep.
Drugs. Yeah. So, but they, yeah, no driving under the influence charges, no reckless driving charges, no leaving the scene charges.
You represent and people all the time. It's on word of mouth or whatever.
I've watched this several times and I can't quite figure out how they can't make any of those charges stick.
Well, and he's had a history of this. He's crashed at least one other supercar. I think it was an F40 or something. Similar situation. This guy, I mean, he must be donating to the police athletic league or whatever.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and assume that that's true. And then also he had a team of fantastic lawyers, not just one, but a team probably. There was a good.
He could have killed someone very easily. I mean, he killed that poor car. Well, that's a felony there.
I know that should be enough in itself. Yeah. But, I mean, there were people on the streets because there were people filming.
Absolutely.
The streets were relatively empty of traffic because of the quarantine,
which is why he was.
Which one of the there was a great breakdown of this on Rogan's Back. They had an attorney sort of give his opinion on it. A former Manhattan prosecutor.
Okay,
not necessarily in this type of field, but you know he's familiar that you know with the reckless driving charge in New York is like in many states it's kind of a catch-all. There's like a lot of different things that you know if you don't have a specific violation you can kind of fall into that category. But one of the things you kind of have to show is that you. Are driving in such a way that you, set out to, recklessly endanger lives of other people around you. Which he was saying that because the streets were empty, they may not be able to prove that aspect of it. That he couldn't, that he wasn't.
And for anyone else, like they would have proved it. Don't worry.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I'm still surprised. I mean, this is the closest I can come to a justification of it. Yeah. I still don't think it works. But like that's what, that was his theory. But I don't understand the leaving the scene of an accident. You know.
Yeah.
Hit and run.
Different. Yeah, different sets of rules for different
people. Folks, yeah. Apparently. So. And then again, if he was at all intoxicated, that's another easy one for the police officers to write up too. I mean, I deal with this stuff all the time. Yeah. I don't understand how this guy got off on everything.
So I got I had to pay a penalty when I got a speeding ticket. So I paid more of a price than this asshole did. And I guess that's what bothers.
And he wrecked,
bothers me.
I mean, I said that minivan bore the brunt of it, but he heavily damaged another parked car. So two innocent people just come out and find their car and didn't smash. Fortunately, no people were hurt.
This will happen again with him. He will crash another dock. He'll crash into his kid the next time. No. And then what? So lesson here, if you are lucky enough to own such a fine automobile, don't drive it like an asshole.
Yeah.
Don't do drugs.
Yeah.
And tip your local police athletic league heartily.
Yeah. Well, again, and get good legal counsel. So it takes all three of these things.
And when you're in trouble, dial Doug Fogler, attorney at law.
If you're in trouble in Denver, Colorado, give me a call.
You've never parlayed this into new business. I never really thought about this.
I haven't. But if any of our listeners do have, I do handle speeding tickets. I handle allegations of driving under the influence. You know,
who needs off the hook?
Yeah, we got our own in-house off the hook.
Yeah, and think, who's the attorney at Breaking Bad? Sorry.
Better call Saul.
But what's the guy? Saul Goodman.
Saul Goodman.
He's a step up from Saul. Don't worry.
I am.
Hey, this guy got 2 points knocked off of my tickets.
That's right. I have one side, so I got some
right there. That's right. Still need to pay that invoice, but... Well, I've got nothing else.
I think that's a good place to so, today,
send in your pictures of Siri and what she thinks is a sports car in your car.
Yeah. Send us your bad cars.
Send your bad cars. And if you send us your address, we'll most likely get you a misaligned t-shirt.
Yeah.
All right. Until next time.
If you send our bad car, we'll send you a
t-shirt. That's right. The better the car, the better the t-shirt.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Bye.